Hello and welcome to the FWI podcast. I'm FWI web manager Michael Target. And for this episode, we've got something very special, an exclusive interview with leader of the Conservative Party, David Cameron. Arable editor Julian Gairdner was fortunate enough to be picked up en route to the Royal Show and given an exclusive interview by the Tory leader. It's about 20 minutes long and well worth a listen. So here we go.
Okay, so it's about 10 to 10 on Monday, 3rd of July. I've just been picked up by David Cameron's car at Banbury Station, and I'm joining him on his journey up to the Royal Show today. David, thanks for letting me join you today.
Great pleasure.
Can you just tell me, first of all, why it's important for you to be at the Royal Show?
I think to demonstrate a real commitment to rural Britain and the rural economy. It's something that's very important to me personally. I've got a rural constituency with 85 parishes, over 100 villages and settlements, and a large number of farmers. And what I want is to make sure we have a thriving, living, working countryside, not a museum. And I know what a difficult time farmers have been through in the last few years, and I want to make sure the Conservative Party gives them the very best chance to compete and succeed in a tricky environment. And we've got a very strong agriculture team. They're making, I think, 31 visits to some 23 shows across the country in the next few weeks and months, and we'll be showing a real commitment to Britain's farmers and to the rural economy.
What do you actually hope to learn from your visit today specifically? I mean, you're going round and visiting a number of people and stands today. What are you particularly looking to get out of the show?
Well, what I find in my own constituency is you just never stop learning when it comes to farming, because there's such a huge diversity of different enterprises. There's an enormous amount of change going on in the industry. I think particularly today I want to learn more about energy crops and biofuels and all the possibilities there, because I think although farmers have had an incredibly difficult time in the last few years, I think it's really important that we're optimistic and hopeful about the future. And I think that energy crops are part of that future. So I'm looking forward to learning about that. I think also the food miles issue and how the environment interacts with farming there is very interesting. And another thing I've talked about a lot in the House of Commons in the past and in my constituency is the issue of labelling. I mean, British farmers now produce the cleanest, best, highest quality standard food in the world. British consumers say they want it. The government's got to help put these two things together by having a proper labelling system.
We'll probably come on to renewable energy and things in a moment. Just in terms of how you've sort of immersed yourself in agricultural issues, have you been on farms and visited farmers and found out what their particular concerns and issues are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in the countryside, and my grandfather was a farmer, and I lived next door to a farmer and spent a lot of time just sitting in his kitchen drinking tea and talking about the pressures on his life. And I do farm visits in my constituency. I have regular meetings with the NFU and others. Huge amount to learn. I mean, it's a very complex and diverse industry, and there's always a huge amount to learn. But I try to keep up. But I dare say, if you wanted to catch me out, you probably could.
What to you, though, is how politically important is agriculture and farming to you?
It is important. People often say, look, the percentage of people in farming is a very small percentage of the country. And my answer is to say yes, but they look after, the whole of the countryside, or almost all of the countryside. And, the countryside, which is one of Britain's greatest features and one of our greatest blessings, it looks like it does because of farming, not in spite of farming, but because of farming. I represent an area in the Cotswolds, and the Cotswolds are as beautiful and desirable as they are because of literally centuries of farming and the way in which that farming took place. The fact that it was livestock and sheep grazing and beautiful stone walls built. This is the interaction of man with the countryside that has produced this incredible environment that we love.
Do you think the current government is taking agriculture seriously enough?
No, I don't, and you can just see that from the whole attitude. We've had the shambles of the single farm payments, where ministers repeatedly promised it would be fixed, and it hasn't been. And they were incredibly slow to sort the problem out. We've got the endless dithering over TB in cattle. We've got the massive increase in regulation in almost every area. And I think that they don't feel it in their bones. They don't understand it in their hearts, and so when it comes to making decisions, they make bad ones. You need a government that every time there's a new regulation proposed is sort of thinking, right, what will this do for farmers? How will that affect farmers? Will it make it more difficult for them to make a living? Given that there has been this background of falling farm incomes and all the problems of foot and mouth and the ban on beef exports and all the problems that there have been, you need a government that is instinctively sympathetic towards farmers in the rural economy, and this one has been completely unsympathetic.
You will have been aware that the Prime Minister wrote to David Miliband when he was appointed and set out a letter of priorities for him and what he was expecting the Secretary of State for the Environment to do. If you were in that position and you were writing to your Secretary of State for DEFRA, what would you be setting out as the priorities for farmers?
I have to say, I think it is rather worrying that after 9 years in office, you have to sort of set down in a letter what the priorities are. You know, we set down in a farming manifesto at the last election what the priorities should be, and we'll set them down clearly at the next election. I think that the most important priorities are to understand that British consumers want to support British farmers and British produce, but they can't because we don't have a proper labelling system, so we've got to sort that out. I think we've got to show that we understand that energy crops and biofuels have a huge potential for farming in the future, and we need a government that understands that and gets behind that. So it's positive measures like those that will actually make a difference, and at the same time focusing on the massive regulatory burden that farmers have and making sure we don't add to it.
And how would you avoid adding to it? What would you actually do?
Because
the government talk about cutting red tape.
No. Well, I mean, you know, let's take an example. It's only a small example, but it's one I got associated with in the House of Commons. You know, horse passports, completely pointless piece of compulsory regulation that we didn't have to introduce. We went for the maximum regulatory option, where we could have gone for a minimum regulatory option. And the government went for the maximum option. Just a typical example of they prefer neatness and comprehensive solutions, even though it makes farmers and those living in the countryside's lives more difficult.
So would you advocate a lighter touch approach then in all areas of where we've got European legislation that requires us to meet certain obligations? Would you be advocating a lighter touch approach?
It's sometimes it will mean taking a tougher line in Europe in terms of saying no to things, but it's about understanding the pressures that farmers are under and about understanding that each new regulation adds to that burden. And at a time when farm incomes have been falling, when, you know, so many farmers have been exiting the industry altogether, you've got to try and make their lives easier. The example I gave of horse passports, we should have gone for a much lighter touch. Yes, absolutely.
Right. But you think there are occasions where we will need a tough touch, if you like, and that we will have to go...
Well, it's a tough touch in Brussels. Sometimes it's to stop... We're going to try and stop some of these regulations fast, you know, more quickly. So it means, you know, means actually being active
In Europe.
In Europe, yeah.
We're talking about Europe. I mean, obviously, you'll be aware that the Common Agricultural Policy was dramatically reformed in the past 2 years, and that's the associated single farm payment debacle has been part and parcel of that. The experts are saying that we're likely to have another review of it in 2008, and a lot of people believing that that will probably be actually another fairly significant reform. There's pressures on the Common Agricultural Policy budget in Europe. What, as a Conservative leader and potentially a Prime Minister in the future, would you be arguing for the direction of this Common Agricultural Policy to go?
Well, I think we have to recognise that the reform wasn't that profound in many ways, because the costs of the CAP are still so great, and I think the direction we want to go in is twofold. Firstly, try to negotiate compulsory decoupling so that all European countries have to decouple agricultural support from production. I think that is very important. And the second thing is progressively to have compulsory co-financing. Countries actually paying a little bit more themselves, or not a little bit more, progressively more and more themselves in terms of agricultural support. I think in the long term, that twin track is the way of genuinely reforming the CAP and genuinely making the system work better. That's what we should be pushing for. We set that out very clearly some months before the last election. I think it has great merit, and I think we should continue to push and take that approach.
Do you think you can
sell
the
item? And at the same time, that would mean, you know, getting out of the remaining export subsidies and import tariffs. I just think in the world we live in, with all the needs to understand and help the poorest in the world, having export subsidies for things like tobacco is just completely crazy.
Okay, so an approach to the kind of cultural policy that is calling for national governments to co-finance more.
Do you think you can sell that idea though to
a wider public in the UK who don't really understand or connect with farming?
Well, it is complicated because I'm not sure people fully understand how much the CAP costs them today. But I think if you sit someone down and talk them through compulsory decoupling, that's ending for right throughout Europe, subsidy going into production so we don't overproduce, we don't have wine lakes and butter mountains and all of that. I think people can understand that. And I think explain to people that, of course, agriculture is going to need support, but that support should be done more on a national basis than on a European basis. I think people will understand that because I think they feel that we have, for many years, been contributing too much to the farmers of other countries, and countries should take more responsibility themselves. So I think the two cores of it, while they sound complicated, co-financing and decoupling, when you actually get to grips with them, it's a sensible and logical approach.
But you're advocating essentially more sort of nationalised policy within Europe on agriculture. Do you actually therefore think it's possible to have a common agricultural policy anymore?
Well, there will be elements that are common, and I think that makes sense, but I'm arguing for a rebalancing, and I think that's very clear.
Okay. Can we just turn to the environment, because you've set out a very green and environmental agenda since becoming leader of the Conservative Party. The obvious area that's of particular interest, which you talked about earlier, was the issue of renewable fuels, biomass, biofuels. Wind and wave power even. Where do you stand on the balance of those?
Well, I don't think it's right for politicians to put their finger in the air and say this is going to be the mix of future energy policy. What politicians have got to do is set a framework for reducing carbon emissions, and I've said we should do that. And then politicians have got to clear away some of the barriers to these industries coming, technologies coming forward. And then we must stand back and rely on the entrepreneurialism and ingeniousness of farmers and energy producers and others. But at the moment, farmers face a very difficult situation because there's such a bad tax regime for biofuels, for instance.
Would you commit to more tax break?
I can't make a commitment. I'm not writing the budget. Attractive as it would be in the back of this car to write the Conservatives' first budget, I can't do that. But I think we should need to look at the tax regime for biofuels. I think we need to look at the way the energy market works and the regulations of the energy market to see if we can make a more level playing field and enable you know, what would be a win-win-win situation, a new crops for farmers to grow, new fuels for people to use in cars and power stations, and a greener, cleaner environment. So it is a win-win-win.
The Energy Act has this renewable energy transport fuels obligation, which commits the country to 5% biofuels blended into transport fuels. One of the criticisms has been is that it seems a bit open-ended, and that potential investors in renewable energy don't know whether the government's commitment or how long-term the government's commitment is to it. Would you be looking to give some sort of guarantees onto committing to certain measures for renewable fuels to help investor confidence?
I think it's something we've got to look at. At the moment, the country, we're on 0.25% when other countries have hit a 2% target, so we're not doing very well. We need to give people confidence that this is for real. Other countries seem to be going further and faster, and we'll look at everything that makes this market really open up.
Now, later on today at the Royal Show, you're kindly supporting our Local Food is Miles Better campaign. What do you look for when you go shopping for food? Do you believe the sort of carbon credentials of the food we eat is important?
Well, one of the first things I mentioned in this interview was the issue of labelling, and I think You know, British consumers, when you ask them, do you want to buy British food? Overwhelmingly, they say yes. When you ask them, do you want to buy food that's locally produced and hasn't travelled right across the world or right across the country, they say, if we can, yes. We need to make that more possible. So I do quite a bit of shopping myself. I try to use as much the local shop that stocked quite a lot of local produce. I can exclusively reveal to Farmers Weekly that this weekend I ate the first of my cucumbers I've grown this year. Great. And I don't know whether this entitles me to hero status, but actually, because I always think cucumbers need quite a lot of protection from the elements, I'm growing them literally 2 foot from my kitchen window. So I think
food inches, right?
So it was food inches. I achieved food inches this weekend. I'm not so confident about the chilies I'm trying to grow, because they are causing me a bit more difficulty. But the cucumbers seem to be going very well.
One of the issues for British producers is the power of the retailers. And obviously, the retailers are, there's an inquiry into the power of the retailers at the moment.
I'm very pleased that's happening. I mean, I think it's very important that the Competition Commission really looks at this issue. You know, the supermarkets obviously offer people great choice and great value, but you know, we've got to make sure that farmers are getting a fair deal, and I think it's right that this is looked at.
And would you potentially look to legislate to rein in the power of the supermarkets?
Well, we have to look at the evidence, and if there's evidence of wrongdoing, then obviously we'd have to act. But we've got, let's wait and see what the Competition Commission have to say.
Okay. One of the issues for farmers is their inability at the moment to access GM crops and to be able to grow GM crops in the UK. Do you think the time has come when we should be allowed to give farmers a choice to grow GM crops in the UK?
Well, I don't think we should lift the moratorium until we've dealt with the two issues of contamination and liability. I think that is important. Although you say farmers are itching to grow GM crops, I don't think that right now anyone would argue there's a big market, and I think we've got to sort those two things out, and I think that's the right way ahead.
Would you eat food which has got GM content in it?
Not knowingly. I'm in favour of better labelling. I think we ought to actually have better labelling, and that gives people the opportunity to make that choice. And on the whole, I think I'd rather make sure I'm eating locally produced and ungenetically modified food.
So you're not an advocate of eating GM food?
Look, it's not for me to tell people what to eat, but let's label things. Let's give people the choice. But before we have large-scale growing of GM crops, we've got to sort out the issues of contamination and liability.
OK. And just looking at the future of agriculture, you chose to go into politics probably in your mid-20s. The average age of a farmer is about 57 in the UK. How can a government invigorate a sector like agriculture and make it attractive for young people to go into it?
I think it's about getting rid of these barriers that are stopping farming from really taking advantage of the growth of ethical consumerism and the fact that people want to buy good quality British food. I think we've got to clear away the barriers to stopping that happening, and I think we've got to clear away the barriers to stopping British farmers playing a big role in our environmental future. And I think if we have a more optimistic and hopeful agenda for farming based on those sorts of things, I think that would encourage young people into farming. It has been incredibly difficult, and it's easy for politicians to say, well, we're going to have to do this, we're going to have to do that. But I mean, I really do believe that if farmers can move up part of the value chain, then there is a hopeful and optimistic future. You know, if you look at, I know they're small, but if you look at the growth of farmers' markets, I know it's small, but if you look at the growth of local produce in local shops, you know, I think there are some hopeful signs that will reconnect the British consumer to the British farmer, and that, at the end of the day, is the greatest hope for British farming and the greatest hope for young farmers going into the business.
Okay, and one final question. If you had to give one tip to British farmers today, what would that tip be?
Tell people how good you are. That is what it's about. You know, people are worried about the food they put into their children's mouths and what they eat and the environmental sustainability of all of it. And, you know, British farmers have the highest welfare standards. The pork they're producing, the beef, the lamb, the way they grow their crops. Boast about what a great job you're doing. Tell people about it. Offer them the chance to in many cases buy your produce direct, and I think there's a big bonus there.
Okay, David Cameron, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for that, Julian. Now, as of next week, we go back to our normal schedule with features and coverage from the Royal Show. So be sure to tune in then. Cheers for now.